From Washington, this is Daybreak Asia. Good morning, I'm Jim Stevenson. Coming up, U.S. asks North Korea pardon, grant amnesty for three detained Americans. Hong Kong democracy calls spread to Macau. Philippine base for U.S. ships draws mixed reactions amid China tensions. These stories and more on this Tuesday edition of VOA's Daybreak Asia. The United States has asked North Korea to pardon two Americans sentenced to prison terms after the conviction of 24-year-old Matthew Todd Miller of espionage on Sunday. VOA's Victor Beatty reports a third detained American also faces trial, and Washington has urged Pyongyang to grant amnesty to all three and allow them to return home.
U.S. spokesman Darby Holliday said the United States has requested North Korea pardon both Miller, who was sentenced to 6 years hard labor by the Supreme Court Sunday, and 46-year-old Kenneth Bae, a Korean-American Christian missionary who has been held since November 2012. He is serving a 15-year sentence. 56-year-old Jeffrey Fole is awaiting trial for hostile acts against the state. Both Miller and Fole were detained separately in April. The Associated Press said it was allowed to attend Miller's 90-minute trial, where the prosecution argued against his alleged request for asylum. He was charged under Article 64 of the Criminal Code, which is related to espionage. Friday, U.S. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf called for amnesty for Miller and the other two detained Americans.
We have requested the DPRK immediately release him and the other detained Americans so they can return home. As we've said, we don't always publicly outline all of the ways we are working to return our citizens home, but we are very focused on this. And have called on the DPRK to release him.
Tufts University Korean Studies professor Song Yun Lee says North Korea has engaged in a series of diplomatic meetings, including discussions with U.S. and Japanese officials in recent weeks, in what he calls an encouraging development.
We know that there was a secret visit to North Korea in August by North Korea policymakers in the Obama administration. So there are signs of, if only a brief, but a full between North Korea and the U.S., and I think in that context, the sentencing of this young American will be followed by ultimately the release of the American and North Korea's attempt to gain some political and perhaps even economic concessions from the U.S.
Lee says North Korea wants to be internationally recognized as a de facto nuclear state. However, U.S. Special Representative to North Korea Glenn Davies said in July, U.S. policy, including sanctions and deterrence, is aimed at a multinational diplomatic effort to denuclearize North Korea. In February, the North rescinded an invitation for American Human Rights Envoy Robert King to visit for talks on gaining Bae's release. A similar effort was also blocked at the last minute in August 2013. Bruce Bennett, a North Korean analyst with the RAND Corporation, says Pyongyang may be seeking another high-profile American visit, having released detained Americans following trips by former presidents Jimmy Carter in 2010 and Bill Clinton in 2009.
As far as the North Koreans are concerned, there's no such thing as a former president. All their presidents still serve, even though they're dead. And so, as far as they were concerned, President Clinton was still an American president. And in Asian culture, the weaker leader always goes to the stronger leader and pays his obeisance. I think Kim Jong-un is needing that kind of situation now. I think he's got sufficient instability that he needs the Americans to try to help him out.
Bennett says the North Korean leader appears to be insecure in his position, having sacked four different defense ministers in the past 2.5 years, turned over his chief of the general staff 3 times, and killed his uncle, the former vice chairman of the National Defense Commission, Jong Song-taek. 2 weeks ago, the three detained Americans were allowed to meet with a visiting U.S. television crew and appeal to the United States for their release. The U.S. says it's doing everything it can to bring the three men back home. Washington, which has no diplomatic relations with Pyongyang, is represented in North Korea by the Embassy of Sweden. Swedish diplomats have met once with Fole, twice with Miller, and 12 times with Bae. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Chinese police have detained a well-known 81-year-old writer after he criticized Beijing's top propaganda chief in online posts. Hoang Truong, better known by the alias Tie Liu, was taken from his home in the Chinese capital Sunday. His wife, John Hung Fong, tells VOA he was led away by police on grounds of provoking trouble. She says the detention is likely related to recent articles he wrote criticizing Communist Party propaganda chief Liu Yunshan for tightening controls on the news media. The writing appeared on foreign-based websites. John adds that police also detained her husband's domestic helper and seized books and computers. While leaders of Hong Kong's democracy movement are plotting next steps in their push for universal suffrage, many in Macau, Hong Kong's neighbor, say the Hong Kong protests have fueled a political awakening there. Shannon Van Sant reports from Beijing.
Macau and Hong Kong are China's two special administrative regions, which gives them a measure of autonomy. In Hong Kong, the political arrangement has allowed a vibrant political culture with pro-democracy political factions and a more freewheeling, independent news media. But nearby Macau remained largely apolitical as it became a global hub for gambling and tourism. However, that may be changing as Hong Kong political activists have challenged Beijing to allow direct local elections for the territory's top political leader. Emily Lau, chairwoman of Hong Kong's Democratic Party, spoke about Macau's parallel calls for open and direct elections of their chief executive.
And whether we act separately or act together, I hope the movement for democracy will surge forward and would not be held back.
On August 31st, Fernando Cui was re-elected as Macau's chief executive. He was elected by a 400-person committee that is largely pro-Beijing. But a referendum held around the same time indicated worrying signs for his public support. Some 89% of the nearly 9,000 people in Macau who participated in the referendum said they do not trust him as their leader. Some 95% of respondents said they prefer if the territory holds direct elections in contrast to the system mandated by Beijing, which only allows candidates picked by a panel of largely pro-Beijing loyalists. Following Macau's referendum, five of its organizers were arrested by Macau police, and one was subjected to judicial investigation. Jorge Godino, a visiting professor at the University of Macau, says the city is undergoing a political awakening. He attributes the discontent to a growing gap between rich and poor.
Especially for young people, things like the enormous increase in the cost of real estate pose significant barriers to building a normal life that did not exist just a few years ago.
Last spring, 20,000 people in Macau publicly protested in favor of democracy and against what they called social injustices created by the gambling industry. Both Hong Kong and Macau are under Chinese rule but maintain separate legal and economic systems. When Britain handed rule of Hong Kong back to China in 1997, the basic law of Hong Kong included that the city's chief executive would eventually be elected through universal suffrage, and it was later decided that election would take place in 2017. There is no such timeline in Macau, and its constitution makes no mention of universal suffrage. Simon Yang is an associate dean in the Faculty of Law at the University of Hong Kong and says Macau faces additional hurdles to achieving democracy.
Even though it's interesting that the basic laws are structured very similar, there's a lot of commonality. But also, I think we've got a very strong tradition of rule of law and also independent judiciary, which in Hong Kong, has a very strong say on important issues, of constitutional law.
Though he was not directly elected, Macau's chief executive seems to be heeding the calls of protesters. Cui has said his term in office will prioritize easing Macau's social disparities and making more affordable housing available. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
Authorities in western Cambodia have detained 11 activists after they tried to stop further studies for a planned Chinese-built dam. About 30 local villagers and environmental activists in the Rang Valley went to the area Monday to protect barricades they had erected earlier this year to prevent access to the proposed dam site. Local residents who will lose their homes if the dam is built have complained about the level of compensation offered to them. They have also raised the issue of damage to the environment that will be caused by the dam. The Philippines and China are locked in a territorial dispute in the South China Sea. In recent years, Beijing has sent forces to occupy reefs claimed by Manila, and boats from both countries have engaged in standoffs in those waters. The island of Palawan in the West Philippines is at the forefront of these tensions, and now Manila is considering allowing the United States to base some of its own forces there. From the Palawan capital, Puerto Princesa, Jason Strother has more.
Boats from the small fishing village of Macarascas head out into the waters of the South China Sea off Palawan's west coast. They pass by the Philippines' Ulugan Bay Navy base. Village council leader Jane Villarin says she worries about the tensions between her country and China in what is known here as the West Philippine Sea. And for that reason, she does not mind having the base so close by.
Protection for us. We live here in the West Philippine Sea, so that's our fear. So that's why that's why the naval and the Philippine Navy are welcome here because of that.
Villarin adds that she would welcome the American Navy too. And following the April summit between U.S. President Barack Obama and Philippines leader Benigno Aquino, that could become reality.
Today I'm pleased that we're beginning an important new chapter in the relationship between our countries, and it starts with our security, with the new defense cooperation agreement that was signed today.
The Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, or EDCA, opens the door for American forces to rotate through existing Filipino military bases. That includes facilities at Oyster Bay, which is located within Palawan's Ulugan Bay base. Oyster Bay is located 160 kilometers from the disputed Spratly Islands in the South China Sea. Manila says the Chinese military is building outposts on Filipino reefs in these waters and harasses its naval forces. Lieutenant Colonel Ramon Zagala, Chief Public Affairs Officer for the Armed Forces of the Philippines, says the presently undeveloped Oyster Bay base is a promising site for American and Filipino forces to work together as outlined in the new defense pact.
The very purpose of that base is to enhance our defense capabilities westward towards the West Philippine Sea. Oyster Bay is one of those that we want to offer to the United States so that we can further develop it.
Zagala says that if Washington accepts the offer, Oyster Bay would still be a Philippines military base and not an American one. He says the development of the Ulugan or Oyster Bay facilities with U.S. help is not meant to provoke China.
I think it is our right, and it's also the duty of the Armed Forces of the Philippines to protect our interests. They should not see the development of Ulugan Bay as a threat. We are merely protecting our interests and our sovereignty.
In May, Chinese President Xi Jinping warned Southeast Asian countries not to form military alliances aimed at a third party. That has been read throughout the region as a message not to try to stop China's advances into the South China Sea, especially with American help. Some observers say the new pact with Washington, EDCA, only agitates Beijing further. Political analyst Richard Haydarian at Ateneo de Manila University says that after the Philippines lost the Scarborough Shoal to Chinese forces in 2012, the Aquino administration rushed to get the U.S. involved in the territorial dispute. And he says the EDCA might have been left intentionally vague to persuade Washington to sign on now.
There are multiple dimensions to the EDCA which show that the Philippines negotiated with the weaker hand.
He says that includes what the U.S. role will actually be if Filipino and Chinese forces exchange fire, how any joint American and Filipino bases like Oyster Bay would be funded for the long term, and what environmental safeguards will be followed in developing such facilities. Environmental protection is a top concern on Palawan, much of which is a designated conservation zone. Oyster Bay itself is home to a mangrove forest and a variety of wildlife, say advocates. It is over these concerns that the Puerto Princesa city government opposes the expansion of the Ulugan and Oyster Bay bases. Opponents of the new U.S.-Philippines defense agreement have filed petitions in the Philippine Supreme Court. If the pact is ruled unconstitutional, then Oyster Bay might remain as it is. Jason Strother for VOA News, Puerto Princesa, Palawan.
Taiwan and China have wrapped up the first round of trade talks aimed at cutting import tariffs on a wide range of goods. Despite political worries in Taiwan about the risks of strengthening ties with Beijing, many say the country's businesses could lose out if the talks drag on and if China strikes a trade liberalization deal with South Korea in the meantime. Ralph Jennings reports for VOA from Taipei.
Trade representatives from China and Taiwan met for 3 days last week near Taipei to start talks on an agreement that would cut tariffs on Taiwanese products such as flat panel screens, machine tools, and petrochemical goods. China and Taiwan have already signed a service trade pact in June 2013, but Taiwan's lawmakers still have not ratified it. Their reluctance is partly a response to the outpouring of opposition earlier this year by protesters who say the service trade pact will hurt the island's economy and make it more vulnerable to pressure from Beijing. Now, as the two sides embark on a similar pact for products, negotiators worry that South Korea may wrap up a similar deal first and get more from China's massive economy. The situation poses a tricky political test as Taiwanese leaders hope to balance public unease over increasing ties with China against the needs of the country's economy, which could get a boost from increasing trade with Beijing. China also wants to show Taiwan goodwill ahead of tense local elections in November, when the Beijing-friendly ruling party runs to expand its mandate. Taiwan and China have been separately ruled since the Chinese Civil War of the 1940s, but China claims sovereignty over the island. In 2008, Taiwan President Ma Ying-jeou laid aside political differences to ease tensions with Beijing through trade and investment agreements. Deals reached since then brought two-way trade to $124 billion last year, making China Taiwan's top trading partner. But officials in Taipei now fear losing out to fellow export-led economies such as South Korea and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations as they tap China for more market access. Analysts in Taipei say China hopes trade deals with Taiwan can win points toward its goal of political unification of the two sides. Taiwan tested China's patience when Parliament shelved the service trade pact indefinitely, stalling liberalization in 144 sectors such as banking and tourism. Taiwanese lawmakers shied away from ratifying the pact after hundreds of university students occupied the legislative chambers in March and thousands more massed in the streets to argue that Taiwan and its longtime communist rival were growing too close. Now Taiwan's political parties are focused on year-end local elections, likely delaying ratification of the service trade deal until the first half of 2015. Taiwanese officials expect at least two more working-level meetings on the trade and goods agreement, with ratification possible by the end of next year. Ralph Jennings, VOA News, Taipei.
Indonesia says four suspected Islamic militants arrested Saturday are from China's ethnic Uyghur minority group and may have ties to the Islamic State group fighting in Syria and Iraq. The four were taken into custody along with three Indonesians. All are suspected of trying to make contact with wanted Indonesian militant leader Abu Warda Santoso. Jakarta has been trying to crack down on Islamic State recruitment in Indonesia. Last month, officials banned the group and the spread of its message. Child marriage is the topic on today's Women Rising segment. The International Center for Research on Women this month released a new report titled More Power to Her, How Empowering Girls Can Help End Child Marriage. The ICRW set out to find out how the programs in four countries, including Bangladesh and India, are working to empower both girls at risk of child marriage as well as girls who are already married. Anne Warner, senior gender and youth specialist at ICRW and lead author of the report, tells Daybreak Asia's Francis Alonso about the group's findings and why the entire community is needed to end child marriage.
What the report is a review of programs in four different countries that work directly with girls to help either prevent child marriage or to mitigate the harmful effects of child marriage.
So, Anne, tell me, give me numbers. How many young girls are we talking about?
Every year, there are at least 14 million girls married. That amounts to about 40,000 girls every single day. And those numbers are unfortunately growing. We know that we have to act now to turn the tide against child marriage. Otherwise, we're going to have more than 140 million girls married over the next decade.
This report, you mentioned that you have looked at a few countries around the world. In Asia, you focused on Bangladesh and India. Tell me about your findings there.
We worked with two organizations who were implementing programs, BRAC in Bangladesh and Pathfinder International in India. Both of the programs were in rural parts of these countries where it is very common for girls to marry before they turn 18. And that has to do with many factors, cultural, social, but also economic factors and lack of alternatives for girls, including lack of good education and information and awareness for both girls and their families. These programs were quite different. The Prachar program in India worked really at the community level to raise awareness about some of the harmful health consequences of child marriage, as well as of early pregnancy and closely timed pregnancies, and how they could go about educating themselves, informing their parents and their community members about the benefits of waiting. In Bangladesh, in the area where we work, BRAC is implementing a program called Social and Financial Empowerment of Adolescent Girls, and this is a multifaceted program that works with girls and receive a variety of life skills, of information, and they also are supported to improve their livelihoods, to do savings, credit, and loans activity to improve their financial literacy. The economic activities in particular seem to really enhance girls' sense of self-sufficiency and their ability to negotiate better the timing and circumstances of their marriage with their parents.
Now, I notice, Anne, that the focus of these programs is toward the girls themselves. In many cases, the girls may be too young to do this kind of negotiating, as you mentioned, about being married later in life. How do you approach a family in a respectful way to bring them into the conversation?
All of the programs are working closely with parents and community members from the very beginning, even before programs are implemented. Girls usually need permission to even participate in these kinds of programs outside of the home or a school setting. So parents want to know, what are you teaching our girls? What are you doing with them? It's important to note that parents want the best for their daughters all over the world. And they often recognize very well the harmful consequences of early marriage because they've either been through it themselves or seen it with others in their community and would like better options for their daughters, but they lack access to good alternatives. Or where there is a strong norm towards child marriage, where everybody else seems to be doing it, there is pressure to marry daughters the way everybody else in the community is doing it. And by actually facilitating a community conversation about that, it can start to challenge and change the norms. Girls are truly extraordinary if they are supported. However, they couldn't and shouldn't be expected to transform their environments on their own. It really is a shared responsibility that parents and legal authorities have to ensure that daughters don't marry. In all of these settings, 18 is the legal age of marriage. So we have to ensure that those laws are enforced and implemented. We also need to move beyond just age as a marker of empowerment and ensure that even if girls are getting married at 19, that they're getting married because they have actively consented to that marriage and that they have been able to make choices that will transform their lives, both before marriage and after marriage.
Anne Warner, Senior Gender and Youth Specialist at the International Center for Research on Women, speaking with Daybreak Asia's Frances Alonzo, who you may hear each week at this time with another story from her Women Rising series. Our latest news series comes your way several times a day. Why don't you stay tuned for Steve Norman and the latest edition next? It's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on Daybreak Asia.
For listeners in China, there's a new Chinese language iPhone application from VOA. Simply go to the iTunes App Store and type VOA
Space Chinese, and then look for VOA News Chinese Edition. With this application, you can get the latest news and radio and TV programs in Chinese. It also lets you transfer photos and video directly to Washington. Go to the iTunes App Store and type VOA Space Chinese to get your free Chinese.